Hi and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast consists of audio blogs which have been published on our website. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? This blog was submitted by a member of the Facebook group. In it, the writer describes the key issues of situation awareness, task fixation associated with high workload, low arousal states leading to reduced situation awareness. Finally, the contributor highlights the impact that a lack of psychological safety can have, reduced ability to speak up, and a general lack of a just culture where errors or mistakes and violations are accepted as part of normal human behavior, which means that lessons are not easy to share. The fact that this useful story came in via an anonymous route is indicative of the problems we face in the diving sector if we are to learn. A few years ago, I was assisting as a simulated victim on day one of the practical phases of a PADI rescue course at an inland dive site. Apart from me, there were two students who I shall call John and Dave, an instructor, a DM, and another assistant, like me, a qualified rescue diver with about 200 dives. John and Dave were both mid-20s, fit, and with about 40 dives each. It was a sunny day, about 12 degrees Celsius in the water, and viz of about 6 metres in typically murky UK water. We were all in dry suits and standard single 12-litre back-mount recreational rig to fit in with PADI course requirements. The morning covered basic skills. Both students appeared very competent, if somewhat hyped up, and a little apprehensive about the afternoon's activities, which would include a practice scenario, working as a buddy pair. After lunch, and with everyone filled back to 210 bar, we re-entered the water. The plan was for the instructor first to lead us all on a short 15-minute bimble to allow the students to relax, after which they would go off with the instructor and DM for more skills instruction and practice, including a search pattern. We, as assistants, would position ourselves on the route back to act as simulated casualties. My buddy and I sighted ourselves at around 10 metres on a slope up to the exit and waited. My buddy became unresponsive on the bottom and we waited, enjoying relaxing in the sunshine. After something under 40 minutes, our students appeared, shadowed by the staff, spotted us and dashed over at high speed. They found me trying desperately but ineptly to get my buddy to move. The students quickly assessed the situation and took charge. Dave did a good lift on my buddy while John, although noticeably excited himself, calmed me and motioned for me to follow him up after Dave. I simulated being overcome by fatigue and signed that I would need help. But John then got even more agitated. He first tried just swimming up with me, which wouldn't work on its own as I was nicely negative. He then tried dragging me, increasingly frantically, along the bottom up the slope to the exit. But this was slow progress. Finally, he did grab my inflator and we began a rush to the surface that I myself had to restrain to achieve a safe rate. Assisted by the DM, John was then fine with the kit removal on the surface and delivered me safely to the exit point. Back on land, he apologised for the precipitate ascent and explained that once he had seen Dave execute the lift on my buddy, he had checked his SPG to find he had just 10 bar left. He showed me his SPG on the bench and it now read zero. He adamantly did not want to mention this to the staff, but finally agreed to sit down and have a chat with me. The low gas situation was plainly down to a failure to monitor. But why? And what other action could then have been taken? What do you think of this analysis? First, the students had had a lot to take on board in practicing what were still new techniques in a much more challenging environment than the pool they had been in the previous weekend. Both had been very focused on the training and the need to perform well. Combined with maintaining a fairly shallow depth, a max of around 12 metres, John had been confident that he would have plenty of gas. This put him in a mindset where checking gas was reduced in importance. Thinking back, he had not checked it since the bimble phase, about 10 minutes into the dive, so why was his sack high? John had previously done only 6 dives in a dry suit, and this was a school suit. Working the suit wasn't yet instinctive, and it wasn't a perfect fit. This alone would increase gas consumption. But on top of that came performance anxiety, leading to physical and psychological stress. I know that my sack stretches from 10 litres a minute in a shorty drifting around a warm tropical reef to 30 litres a minute in the cold and dark and a dry suit doing my own rescue course. Even the bimble had been more stressy than intended, as when he and Dave did stop to check SPGs, they had lost the instructor in the poor vis and had a few moments of hard swimming and concern before they picked him up again. Might this have then disincentivized gas checking as a distraction from core course activity? What about the instructor and DM? They should have noticed that students weren't cross-checking gas, but had themselves fallen prey to task focus, exacerbated by the fact that the students appeared confident and alert, so it was not immediately obvious how close they were to the limit of their experience and competence envelopes. Also, this was an advanced course, so watching for such basic things as gas checks might again have assumed a lower mental priority. At the other extreme, I had had a really easy time and had so much spare capacity, I had fallen well below my arousal threshold. Rather than dreaming, toying with the fish, and idly playing with trim, I should have spent my time thinking about the wider picture, how long the dive had been going on, and what gas the students might be burning. I could have been a lot more ready, so to the final rescue. In the scenario, John was the rescuer and I was the helpless victim. But outside the scenario, I was in great shape and had around 120 bars. John was so focused on his role that despite a dire shortage of gas, asking for assistance in the shape of my alternate never crossed his mind. Similarly, in my role, I was not expecting to deal with a diver in distress, and so I didn't analyze the situation correctly. So I think there were lots of good lessons for everyone that day. Fortunately, we were at a shallow depth, with little danger of DCI and a short swim up. Perhaps at 20 meters or below, there would have been different thought processes on both sides, but that involves too many what-ifs to go through here. But I'll finish by noting that we had specifically picked the rescue site to be shallow so that the students could fail safely. It was just that the problem that did happen wasn't one we had specifically planned to mitigate. I'd also add that the instructor and DM were not in any way autocratic or unapproachable, but John was still very uncomfortable about admitting what had happened. It just showed how far you have to go to instill a true just culture in an assessed setting. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.